All right. Well, here we go then. Hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And I'm Aaron Flores. We are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles and alternative transportation, arts and culture, communication and the internet. And today, what would we say, joy?
Yes, joy and simplicity. Yeah, totally. We're in the studio with Allison Wiley, person of fame and lore. Thank you so much for joining us, Allison.
It's really fun to be here, and your coffee is really good.
Oh, thank you. I tried to brew it strong.
Yes, strong is what I like.
We're sharing a French press of five scoops of whole beans.
And no doubt it's organic and direct trade and shade grown, right?
Well, I don't know about the shade grown. It's Cafe Mam, which is the option from
trade brand.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes, I thought so.
Azure Standard is the name of the company that does the bulk foods that we purchase. We do a cooperative
part
buying.
Of the Lentz Grocery Co-op here mm-hmm. in Lentz.
In outer southeast Portland, off the map. And we're just barely off the map. Or maybe on. We're like right next to the freeway.
We're like on the edge of the map.
Yeah, yeah.
Right before the dragons.
Far enough away that we have no like hip bars or places to go and hang out.
But aside the fact from our own that houses. You're on the Springwater Corridor makes you at the heart of all that matters.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. And I'm trying to remember, we met someone who does some running. I believe it was a friend of Tammy and Logan's at their going away party. His blog is Advanced Riskology, and I'm blanking on his name. But anyways, he does some blogging about really interesting things, living on the edge. He got into, I believe, training for a marathon. And so he actually had run past our house and recognized the doors, like the McMenamin style door that our neighbor has planted in her yard house around it, which makes it unique. On one of his training runs, when we met him, we said, oh, we live off the Springwater Corridor. And I think he was the one that mentioned the door. We said, yes, that is indeed where we live. So we're out here.
Which
in
turn, you guys have copied.
Actually, there's two doors out there now.
Yeah.
A bunch of doors standing with no houses around them. It's the next thing. It's cheaper than buying a gate.
That's true.
And it's easier than building a new gate for yourself.
Well, yeah, like you go to a restore or something like that and, you know, you can find doors just about anywhere, really.
That's true. Yeah. Allison, have you ever purchased a door from the restore?
I have not, but I know of the store you're talking about.
Yeah. Restore is, I think they have them all over the country, right?
Right. That's the Habitat for Humanity thing.
Yeah. And it's reclaimed materials for construction and house.
Right. Say a house is demoed out or an office is demoed out. Mm-hmm. And if whoever is doing the demolition, if they don't want to like throw it in the disposal or whatever, they can donate those materials to Habitat. They'll go through it, use what they can, and sell what they either don't have a use for at the time or cannot use.
Yeah, the house that you used to live in actually had, I believe, closet and doorknobs and cabinet knobs.
Yeah, the
handles.
The door to my room was a Habitat door, and it's actually an exterior door. We had to hammer out the little thing on the bottom, you know. It's like this metal, well, it's an all metal door first of all, so I could stick magnets to it, which was really cool. But it's a outer door, you know, for an entryway or something.
Exterior,
like that. Yeah, thank nice. You exterior door.
I'm here for the big words. I was away this weekend visiting it was my friend's 31st birthday. Yeah, he's like 6 months older than I am. And he and I used to live together with four other guys that were all there. There was only five of us. But we spent the weekend at a house in Sun River.
Nice.
So Allison, we were just talking about confessions right before we rolled tape. And I said, hey, I'll just say this to the world. I drove a combination of about 9 to 10 hours this weekend to get to Bend to hang out with friends and come back. And I believe, Allison, you were absolving me of my sins at that point.
I think I was saying that all of my own rules have plenty of exceptions, and I don't stand in judgment.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and it's the sort of thing where I wouldn't want to do that like certainly not every day and probably not even every weekend. But here and there, it is nice. And Bend is a damn hard place to get to by transit.
Is it possible?
It is possible.
It is.
Yeah, some of my colleagues actually manage the grants that help some of those buses. There is actually a lot of transit between here and Bend. It might be called the Breeze.
Yeah, the Central Oregon Breeze, which I rode. They're a fantastic service. I believe they are privately owned and operated. They may receive a subsidy, but they're not a public organization institution.
You're right.
But they also, it's very difficult to take your bicycle along on that ride. And I believe because they're a private institution, they don't really have many incentives to add bicycle functionality. And we've talked about that on other shows. So, one thing that was exciting to me, and this is a super transit wonk thing that no one else will be excited about except me.
Maybe Chris Smith.
Could be. Yeah, Chris Smith.
I know Chris.
Yeah, yeah.
I know Chris.
He came in a couple episodes ago and told us about the comprehensive plan. He's a cool guy.
He's smart. Smart
yeah.
guy.
Yeah, totally. So I was driving my friends up to, we were borrowing, I think it was Mike's car. Mike was the birthday boy. And he wanted to go out for his birthday. So we went from Sun River to Bend by car. And we went to, I believe, the Summit. I was going to say the Saloon, but the Summit is the name of the it's kind of a bar, kind of a dance club in downtown Bend. And lest it be doubted that there are skanks and douchebags in Bend, in fact, they are, and that's where they go to hang out. So there were a bunch of good people there, I'm sure. There were also a bunch of people that seemed to be there for improper motives.
I see.
And I'll leave it at that.
Would you say the parlance of our time would be meat market?
Yes. Okay. Yes, exactly. It's a place where if you want to have sexual relations and you don't have the connections to do so, that's where you might make those connections.
Right. Okay.
And sometimes it's more obvious than others. But as we were driving up there, we were following the Central Oregon Point, I believe, which operates service from the Chemult Amtrak station to Bend. So if you want to get to Bend using, conscionable transportation, it would take a long time because you have to go over the pass south of Eugene, end up in the tiny town of Chemult where the train has to stop twice so that all the cars can be accessible to the platform. And then you have to cop onto that bus, which goes from Chemult to Bend, which I believe is probably a 2-hour drive, more or less. So it's like a 6-7-hour trip, all told, which is about twice as long as it takes to drive there.
Right.
But driving over the pass sucks, especially at night.
Because you didn't leave here till like, what, 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning?
Yeah, we went to see Hillstomp of the Doug Fir and a fantastic band, fantastic show.
Pretty
you
awesome
got a
show.
Bunch of beer and a bunch of hate spewed upon you, right?
As well as saliva, yes.
Trying to break up fights.
What did I say in my text to you? What
you
was
still
that, Monday?
Smell like,
yeah,
like beer
I smell
and
like BO beer and hepatitis.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
I don't know if this is the right time to talk about it. But yeah, I guess Hillstomp, we'll talk about it now.
Yeah, yeah.
Unless you want to talk more about Ben.
Oh, go for it. Actually, go for it, because I forgot to close the studio door, so I'll do that real quick.
So Hillstomp, awesome show. Great band. Sarsaparilla also opened for them. And we had some friends come along. It's just an awesome time. But they are a very energetic band, and there were some dudes out there that... They really wanted to dance. You could tell, like, deep down, they just wanted to dance and jump around and stuff. And we all were. But someone forgot to tell them that Nirvana is no longer around and people don't mosh anymore. And someone also forgot to tell the bigger dudes that when people mosh into you, all you have to do is sort of hold them from bumping into you. You don't have to push them back or throw a punch
or slam them to the ground.
Yeah.
It was kind of weird because Hillstomp is like, they are really cool guys, really great music. And like,
the dude gave me a hug.
Yeah.
The dude from the band, like, just hugged me without any pretense or anything.
No provocation.
No.
They're
obviously like a friendly, positive energy kind of band. Uh-huh. They're not one of these, like I said, they're not one of these angsty, grungy bands.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a different story. We should come back to that part.
Sure. But you were breaking up fights.
Let me finish up the whole fighting thing. So this happened about, 3 or 4 times during the night. Once during Sarsaparilla's set, but mostly all during Hillstomp's set. There were these dudes that were just jumping around and bumping into people. And they got a little out of hand, but in the meantime, there's these bigger guys who, were by all intents and purposes, I would say bystanders, but
minding their own business,
minding their own business, listening to the music with their girl. But the problem is, you know, you've got all this energy and all these people moving around. They bump into each other, and big dudes with their girl get really offended really fast, and so they don't really alleviate the situation well. Yeah.
Yeah, so the
like it's bad enough that there's these group of, for all intents and purposes, you know, post hippie punks,
mm-hmm.
You know, are a little bit more rowdy than the crowd really cares for.
Right.
But they're manageable, and they're mostly keeping to their own circle. But when you have sort of a retaliation against that, as opposed to just like when they would bump into me, I just stick my hand out, they bump into my hand,
like, hey,
they
I'm
move
over
on.
Here.
Yeah. Yeah. Then, you know, with these other guys, they get offended, so they just push back sometimes with more force than necessary, a lot of times with more force than necessary.
Right.
So then what happens is then these guys, you know, then the other party thinks, oh, now I'm the victim. And so then they come back, they come running hard at these bigger dudes, and the bigger dudes are like, oh, now I'm the victim and I get to retaliate. And, you know, it just becomes a mess. And this is all happening right near me.
I was going to say, it's not in a vacuum. There's a bunch of other people nearby.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Right well, in front of the stage.
I mean, everything's near everybody. It's not like we were, you know, in a stadium and, you know, we could all kind of go our separate ways.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there wasn't very far for me to go and it still not be right there in front of me.
It's ironic that all that happened with the band who wanted to hug you.
Right.
I mean,
that's
kind of
the thing.
Ironic.
Yeah. But I don't know. I'm mostly just somebody who wants to mind their own business, but
you're a pacifist at heart.
I am, damn it. But I couldn't let things stand by. There was one guy, especially with these dreadlocks, I don't know. He's got some deep wounds. He's really this really short guy, really stocky, but he got pushed around a couple times by these big dudes, and he just would not let it go. Mm. At one point, he was brandishing an empty beer bottle and looking like he was ready to crack it over somebody's head.
That's no good.
So these small fights would break out, and it wasn't just me. It wasn't like, you know, all 5 foot 120 of me is like is like holding these two people back. There's a bunch of people doing this, so I can't take like full credit.
You have a big presence though.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do.
It's honestly, it's more traumatic than I realized at the time. Like even now, I'm like kind of like,
yeah, like it sticks with
shaky.
You.
Yeah, it's hard for me not to absorb some of that negative energy.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the very last time is probably the most significant because, you know, I mentioned this short guy with the dreadlocks and his beer bottle of death.
Oh no!
Or beer bottle of ill intent, anyways.
What are you having tonight? I'll take the ill intent, a pint.
I'll take the ill intent with a side of angst.
Shaken.
It's always shaken.
That's right.
Anyways, the very last time it was the most significant because I think I just absorbed way more of the negative energy than I thought I had originally. He was like talking to somebody else, and you could tell like this guy that this short guy was talking to was trying to calm him down, but it wasn't working. And again, it's happening like no more than 2 feet from me.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see like this other big dude that they're gesturing towards. He's got his back to these guys, so he wouldn't see this thing coming.
Right. The bottle of ill intent.
I don't know either of them from Adam.
Right.
I have no ties to either of them. I have no ill intent towards any of them, but I really
You were
don't
having ginger
have,
ale.
I had a ginger ale. But I don't have like any investment towards them personally either.
Mm-hmm.
I just want to enjoy the show.
Right, right.
This is becoming a longer story than necessary. Short story is I got in this short guy's face and I was like, look, not tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Not tonight.
Did he accept that?
No. he kind of got in my face and like, what, is this your boy? Why are you protecting him?
Oh, dear.
And yeah, I'm like, and no, he. I just want to enjoy the show. Let's just dance and have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
And at which point, the guy who he was about to pick a fight with turns around and he's like, what, you want to start something? You want to start something?
Right.
And
so you're getting like the short shrift from both
right,
ends.
Right, right. Yeah. And again, all 5'3", you know, 120 pounds of me is like between these two brick walls, for mm-hmm. lack of a better term. One may be a shorter brick wall than the other, but yeah. they're both pretty. I would have just been air between them, really. So I proceed to get into this big guy's face and say, like, no, nobody's starting anything. Mm-hmm. Let's just enjoy the show, and shame on you because you're bigger and you should be better.
Should know better. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, things worked out
and
okay.
And it seemed to cool
end, right?
off after that. Yeah. Like the shorter guy still was really steamed, and I was just like, dude, just enjoy the show. And I could still, after that was like towards the end of the show. And after the show, I saw the short guy following the big guy up the stairs.
Oh.
And I finally decided, okay, this is beyond my
yeah,
scope
when it leaves
of
the venue
expertise, but mm-hmm. I still can't like leave it hang. So
yeah,
I let security know.
That was smart.
And yeah, I mean, I don't know. Anyways,
yeah,
that's the long of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, in the meantime, show ends. I'm there at the stage because what else am I doing? And the singer from Hillstomp he doesn't put his stuff away or anything. He just sits on the edge of the stage and talks with people.
Which is cool.
And yeah, it's pretty awesome.
I respect that.
And some lady was talking with him. I was just making my way back. I had my coat. Underneath the stage.
Oh, yeah. It conveniently stashed yeah. out of the way.
Yeah.
That was a smart move, actually.
Yeah, and it was still there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I went to grab that and was about to leave, and this lady was just wrapping up her conversation with the guy from Hillstomp, and I didn't catch all of it. I heard something about she represents somebody, you know, and was trying to make some deal, you know, maybe like a future gig or maybe a record deal for them. I don't know. But he was like, just like, yeah, all right, let's do it. Yeah, great. Good to meet you. And he gave her a hug. And, you know, she's going about her way. And I just happened to be walking by.
You're right.
And
there.
We make eye contact. And he just comes in for a hug. Like, no prompting whatsoever. So I'm at a loss for, like, what to do or say. I just was like, I don't represent anybody, but thanks. You did a really good show.
Well, congratulations.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hillstomp. I just found the website. It's hillstomp.com, just
nice.
Like it sounds.
Nice.
And yeah, as far as simplicity is concerned, the drum set is, it's not entirely buckets and cans, but there's a lot of buckets and cans involved there.
There were more buckets and cans in the early days.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I highly recommend them. So yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They've actually been, I think we played one of their tracks on the program like a year ago or more.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Back when we used to play music on the program. I stopped that because it was a lot of work. But I tell you what, if anybody wants to donate us like a music license so that we can just play whatever we want any old time without having to get in touch with the person who owns the music, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Then we'll play music all the time. I would start my own music spin-off show if that was the case. Mm-hmm. Like if someone gave me a license, yeah, I would just...
The Sprocket soundtrack.
Yeah, it would be like a spin-off show where we just kind of sit down and talk about music. So someday. Let's see. Well, there's a couple of things that we had some mail. Should we maybe do the mail real quick? And then Allison, we will talk to you about everything.
Everything under the sun.
That's right. Well,
yeah,
let's see.
Mail it up.
First of all, iTunes reviews.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Which, I, you know, they probably came in like a month ago and I just looked like the other day. So thank you. If you like the show and you want to support us and you want to give us some visibility, an easy
Please.
Way to do that is to click on one of the stars. 3 or 4 or 5 or 1 if you want. Someone gave us a 1-star review, and I don't know who it was, but, you know.
This is my housemate, Rod.
Oh, probably so. yeah, but we got a few. Do you have those?
Yeah, got them right here. So iTunes reviews 5 stars. Nice is the title by Jay in Chicago. For a non-professional podcast, this is really well produced. Even though the hosts are not really talking about anything in particular, it is very entertaining. which is what we strive to do.
That's right. We talk about nothing.
Yes. Brock and Aaron have really good radio voices and sound just very nice. This podcast, sorry, I can't read this without laughing a little. This podcast is not just about utility cycling, but many other subjects, always well and interestingly presented. It has a Portland focus, but still relevant for people outside of Portland.
And I sure hope so, because, yeah. I mean, there are people who listen in town, but there are also a lot of people who don't.
No, I was surprised at how many listeners we have abroad, like even before I was, permanent co-host. Just as I was a listener, you know, I'm not just a co-host, I am a listener.
Oh, thanks. Sometimes I listen to me too.
But yeah, like I would listen to your guys' mail segments and just hearing like Montana, Minnesota,
right,
Boston,
right.
You know.
Yeah. The next one, Portland Bound.
Portland Bound by Eater Anonymous. These guys know bicycles and Portland and beer. And they should become employees of the Portland Tourist Bureau. You know, I am looking for another job.
Hey, why not?
I do miss Brandon, but Aaron is really coming into his own in only a few episodes. Damn right. I would love to move to Portland based on what they discuss. Surely Portland has its faults, right?
No, there are none.
Question mark.
This place is perfect.
Nope. Keep up the good work. Go Brock.
Me.
Go you.
Why?
I'm still coming into my own.
All right,
I haven't
thanks.
Earned the go Brock.
Apparently.
Or the go Aaron.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll say go Aaron.
Thanks.
We got from Nick on Facebook. He sent us this. So I'll just kind of put this on in the background as we talk.
Let's start from the very beginning.
All right, I'm just catching up on podcasts from a few weeks ago and was reminded of the Hong Kong song inspired by our own MTR Underground Transport System. It's from a few years ago, so there's about twice as many stations as there were then, but it's still good fun.
So this is what it sounds like. And these are names of the stops on the underground system.
This is pretty cool.
Yeah. It's also a recognizable melody.
Kuntong and Lantin and at Yao Tong change for Kowarin Bay, North Point, Fortress Hill, and
so there's a couple
that's
of
awesome TriMet PR people.
Right.
Listening.
Right,
there's
exactly.
Something for you.
Yeah, we need some more viral YouTube videos with songs. I did just tell you how to ride the bus.
Yeah.
Thank you, Nick. We appreciate
that's
that.
Pretty sweet.
Jason
on Twitter says, it is ironic that Adam Fisher likes music in physical form, but released an album on iTunes only.
I will say yes, that in fact is ironic. That is matter of fact, maybe the technical definition of irony, which some people miss these days. So
something
there
that's
it is.
Unexpected.
Right.
Yes.
I will also say that I looked into trying to make a physical LP version of the record that I made with my band several years ago.
Yes.
And that was...
It's quite expensive.
It's very expensive, yeah. So I can understand why, in fact, Adam didn't have an LP made of his project, so maybe that's down the road. But thanks, Jack. Well, hey, that's everything that we have. There was an article from Sean Granton. Maybe we'll put the link up, and if we run out of things to talk about with Allison, maybe we'll
Which
talk
we
about
won't.
That. We probably won't. Yeah,
but we'll put the link up.
Exactly,
it's a great cartoon, guys.
Yeah. Sean is he's a fantastic. He does zine style comics.
Yeah. I think
that's what you
technical
said.
term is journal comics.
Oh, okay.
But, yeah.
I didn't need to repeat it. Sorry about that.
No, it's cool.
All right. Allison, would you like some sort of fanfare? Can we give you a musical introduction or interlude?
If that's what you'd like to do. I hadn't expected it, but that sounds generous.
I think when it's not expected is probably the best time to have one.
Yes.
Let me drop this in here for you. Allison Wiley from diamondcutlife.org. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. And is it .org?
It is an org, yes.
There we go. Those are better than .com.
I think so.
I think, yeah. Also better than AU. Not that I have anything against Australia. It's just, I don't know how to pronounce it. .au. So tell us first perhaps about the blog. What do we have here?
I love writing my blog. So Diamond Cut Life, the subtitle is More Joy, Less Stuff. And I've been blogging since late 2007, so it's been more than 5 years now. So some of my principles are just like yours.
Yeah, we actually have a lot of overlap, which I was excited about.
Yeah, we have a lot of shared values. Yeah, so my premise is that you can have a wonderful quality of life without necessarily having a lot of money. And I've been both poor and relatively, you know, well off in my life. And I've been joyful pretty much across the board.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't think that money is necessarily what we all need to be striving after too hard.
Like that's not going to make you feel any better if you have more of it necessarily.
I think that you definitely need to have all your basic needs met. I'm not a fan of being poor and going into the big suffering thing, not at all. But when they look at the research on who really is happy, one of the big predictors is the number and quality of relationships in your life.
Mm-hmm.
That's not related to money now, is
it? That doesn't necessarily cost anything.
No. Not at all. I mean, it costs your effort. It means you need to give your attention.
Right.
That's what it takes. It takes your attention.
Yeah, and that I suppose some of us have that in more limited quantities than others. I would like to think that I've got plenty of attention, although sometimes I wonder if I do. Sometimes I wonder, like, you know, if I get impatient easily or it's more difficult to maintain relationships because, you know, it's that much extra push when I could be sitting down by myself.
Sure.
But I think
that we all need some downtime and some solitude.
Mm-hmm.
I really believe that. I think that nature is a wonderful time and place to get solitude.
Nature's good for that.
It really is.
Have you done that recently?
Yeah, just last Sunday I posted.
I was just reading that.
Oh, isn't that a fun one?
We're talking
about my post entitled "The Gorgeous Dance of Rattlesnakes Mating." Mm. And I was with two friends in Southern California, which is where I'm originally from. And it's my friends Aubrey and Jeremy, 12 years old and 16 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And we were hiking, and over in the distance, this fellow had this camera. He was just transfixed with something on the ground. So we went off the trail to investigate. I wish you guys could have been there. These snakes were halfway up off the ground. They were rattlesnakes. And they're undulating, and they're wrapping around each other, then they're falling to the ground and coming up again. They were mating.
Like snake charmer style sort of thing?
It was almost like that. Mm. And it was gorgeous and completely unexpected.
Yeah.
It's just like you're dropped down into this place, and our jaws were on the ground.
Yeah.
We were thrilled. We were thrilled.
Yeah.
This is one of those experiences that might happen once in a lifetime, and it had nothing to do with money.
Right.
Nothing to do with money.
And you can't buy that, really.
Not at all.
Like, I don't know of any place you can buy that experience, actually.
No.
Yeah. Do you mind if I quote you quick on that?
Go ahead.
Because this was something that really stuck with me when I read this. What did it cost us to see the spectacle that most people never see, not once in their entire lifetimes? A $3 parking fee. Even if we hadn't had $3, we could have parked in the neighborhood and walked over. The point is that nature belongs to everyone of all income levels. That's a powerful, beautiful thing. Nature can make us rich.
Yeah.
That really stuck with me when I read that.
Yeah.
Definitely, yeah. And that's one of the things I think that's why it's so important.
Thank you for that, Aaron.
You're welcome.
Yeah. In an urban context, that's why it's important to support, like, you know, good parks and good access to the outdoors.
Yes.
And that's why I like Metro here in the Portland, Oregon area, because they do a good job of taking care of natural resources and making them available to all of us. So yeah, it's a good thing to keep in mind, I think, just that when you pay your taxes, some of those go to parks.
Mm,
so
they do.
I like that.
But you know, let's also step outside of, I mean, I think all three of us are in love with the People's Republic of Portland. Okay.
Yes.
I think that we're all right there.
Yes.
But you know, I challenge myself to think of people in completely different settings. You know, folks who live in Oklahoma or in New England or in North Dakota, for example. And I'm really interested in my blog, not just what's true for us here in Southeast Portland, but what's true for everybody in mm-hmm. other places and also in other times. And everybody has their own kind of nature. The Great Plains are going to look nothing like Portland, but they have beauty. Those wide open spaces. I think it's really important for me to not get too stuck on my own beautiful little corner of the world, because there's beauty everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah, it's somewhat problematic. I mean, yeah, Portland is awesome, but it can be problematic, especially with the way our neighborhoods are designed. You can be really self-sufficient in a particular mm-hmm. neighborhood.
Mm-hmm.
But then the downside of that can be that you become myopic in
mm-hmm.
a way. Like, I mean, Hawthorne maybe isn't the best example, but
it's actually a very good example. Hawthorne is a very good example.
you could conceivably like live in Hawthorne and never really have to get out of Hawthorne.
That's Hawthorne Boulevard here,
correct.
The central hip district of Southeast Portland.
Yeah. And in fact, a lot of my novel takes place on Hawthorne.
Oh, really?
Yeah. My novel is called Revel, and it's about both Portland, but also Southern California.
Okay.
But the point of it isn't for people to just, it's easy to be inward facing, but there's things that are true in the novel that would be true if you were setting it many, many other places in the world. Wow. You still have the same core human experience. You have frustrations, you have problems, you're constantly trying to work through your problems.
Right, right. And that happens regardless of where you are.
It really does.
Yeah.
Commonalities are what I try to look for.
This novel, it's available now?
It is. Multnomah County Library has it. Powell's is considering it. I'm pretty sure they're going to pick it up because look at where Powell's is located. They've got a store right there on Hawthorne.
Right.
I really think it would fly off the shelves in Powell's on Hawthorne.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's also available for order on the
internet. Oh, it's on Amazon.
And everywhere.
Yeah. I've got 18 reviews so far on Amazon. And it's getting good reviews, even though a lot of the reviewers so far are my friends.
Yeah, yeah. No, the first chapter is available, I think, on your website, and it's arresting. It's starts out with a truck being burnt, I think. So that's
yeah. It starts out with a bang. Starts out with a fire.
Yeah. Do you want to talk a little bit about your day job, real quick? I know you
We
weren't going to focus on it, but
it's worth mentioning.
I'm a transit nerd and wonk. So
yes, I like transit a lot. So I work for the state of Oregon, and I manage rural transit. So this is my day job that I get paid for. My writing, I don't get paid for, but I love it even more. Anyway, so what I do for a living, a lot of what I'm doing is going down into Southwest Oregon. And my husband is jealous of me because my job is so heartful and so wonderful. I go down to places like Ashland and Bandon and these gorgeous rural counties. Mm-hmm. And I'm basically a consultant and a grant manager for rural transit. And I feel great about my work.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the state of rural transit in Southwest Oregon right now?
We need more of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I would have thought, just based on my own research, trying to figure out like where you can get without a car. And
yeah, it's hard. It's hard because as you guys definitely know from, you know, being in a pretty dense urban core, it takes some density to have very much transit. You have to have a lot of people in a relatively small space. Well, that's exactly what's not the case in rural Oregon or rural anywhere. You don't have that many people. They're spread out over a lot of space.
And they're not a small space, yeah.
Yeah, it's the completely opposite situation. I mean, we probably all live within close range of TriMet. TriMet is available to us. We use it.
Yeah, I can hear the diesel engine from my bedroom.
I believe you. I believe you. So if we're living in rural Southwest Oregon, if we use transit, it's probably going to be because we're elderly or we're disabled. And so we need to get to the doctor, we need to go shopping, and it's going to be demand response, which is a very different kind of transit than the fixed route stuff that we're used to.
It's more like a dial-a-ride.
It's similar to dial-a-ride, yeah. Okay. And I've learned to really respect that. I would have said before I got this job, I would have said, that's inefficient, that's too much driving. That is the lifeline. That is a lifeline for people who are either too old to drive or there's a variety of reasons that people can't drive. Income plays a big factor.
Right, right, yeah.
But these demand response transit lines are a lifeline for people.
Yeah, well, I'm glad they are there.
Me too.
I do know it's possible to take public transit from, let's see, I believe from the tip of the peninsula in Washington on the Olympic Mountain Range down to Lincoln City and Yahats. Mm. And then between Yahats and Coos Bay, Oregon, there's a gap of about 70 miles that you can't cross
by
bus.
We talk about that gap in my workplace.
Do you?
We talk about that. Mm. And we're
aware. Does it have a name?
It doesn't have an official name because we hope for it to not be there too much longer.
Right on.
But yeah, connectivity is what it's about. You want people to be able to make the connection and not have a gap.
The Yahats Coos Bay gap.
Yeah, that's what we'll call it for now, Brock.
There's a guy, Dan Leahy, I believe is his name. He was an instructor at the Evergreen College up in Olympia, Washington, and he wrote a little essay, which I have not yet tried to contact him and see if I can distribute that, but a friend found a copy for me in print. And it's kind of a journal-style chronicle of his public transit journey from Olympia to L.A. by bus. And that gap, I believe he either chose, I think he had a guy from a laundromat give him a ride for $20.
All the way through that 70 mile. Wow.
Yeah. I've considered if I was ever going to try and make that trip without a bicycle, I might either try and walk it if I had the time or hitchhiking or possibly a cab ride. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's always some option. You have to be resourceful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's see. It was something else. I think I was trying to think about, transit stuff. I'm sure if it's really important, we'll come back to it.
Well, I think you and I both like bicycling as well as transit.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of a bike do you ride, Allison?
You know, it's a good low-cost bike with big fat tires. Mm. And I ride it to and from church, and I ride it to and from my carpool partner's house. My husband and I, throughout our lives together, it's been 10 years, we've always just shared one car, which feels good. Yeah. It's a car diet. We can call it being on a car diet.
Sure.
And so we live on a frequent bus line. Thor will take the bus to work a lot of days. When the weather is good, he'll bicycle back and forth to work. And again, in the warm weather months, basically half the year, I'll bicycle to my carpool partner's house, and I go through Mount Tabor Park. And there is no better way to begin and end a day than bicycling through Mount Tabor Park.
It's a beautiful spot.
Yeah. Oh, it's so joyful.
Yeah. Aaron, you're fond of that.
I am. It's one of my favorite rides. I have weekly therapy down on Hawthorne Boulevard. So from here, there's a number of ways you can go, but my favorite way is to go up and over Tabor as opposed to around it.
Yeah.
Which I might argue is faster than going around it because you can pick up quite a lot of speed coming back down.
Oh, yeah. I've burned through some brakes coming down Mount Tabor.
Yeah. You need them, I suppose.
Yeah. The brakes get used.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask you possibly about a couple of different recent entries that you made that sparked my interest.
Oh, sure.
And Aaron, if you had any that you came
he
to
likes
mind.
The rattlesnakes mania, I can tell.
Right. Is there anything that's really exciting to you right now? Maybe like the thing that's like on the forefront of your mind as far as simpler living?
I always have probably more going on than is good. A lot of us are like that. A lot of creative people, mm-hmm. we have a lot of things going on. My novel's been on my mind. The blog I'm able to do a lot more with. Now that the novel is finally finished and I can just be putting it out there, it's a lot easier of a life.
Right.
I have friends who are doing novels, and what I tell people, I try to just be kind of brutally honest, that novel was way harder than doing my master's degree. The master's degree was a piece of cake compared to finishing a novel. And you guys are both creative. You've probably done big projects that took quite a while to complete.
Sure.
I think it's extremely hard to complete something that big. It's easier to start it. Mm-hmm. Finishing it is harder.
Yeah.
To me, a blog or maybe a podcast might be almost kind of parallel to a blog. You get to do a piece of work, and it's complete, and it's out in the world.
And you don't have to think about it anymore.
Yeah. You move on to something fresh and new. Anyway, if you're doing a big artistic project, respect how much it's going to take out of you mm-hmm. and how much commitment it takes. It's way more than you'd imagine.
Make time and space for it.
Yeah. You need a supportive partner, spouse, or be single. I mean,
right.
One of those three.
Live alone in the woods. It's probably the best place for many artists. Yeah, if we wanted to be like very economic about our time. That's why I haven't finished those songs for our Indiegogo supporters yet.
Ah, yes.
But yeah.
But you've shown me some pretty good ideas. You've got some good starts.
Thanks.
See,
yeah.
you gotta put some time into it.
Exactly.
It's a lot of time. Yeah. It's a lot of time.
I'll just go down maybe the list of the things that stuck out to me. Sexy guys and pinto
soup. I knew you were going to say that.
Yes.
I mean, knew you were going to go there.
Why not?
That was a fun piece. I had a lot of fun writing that piece. You know, all of us have to eat. And we were just talking about food when we were starting our time together this afternoon. All of us have to eat. And think of how many thousands of meals you eat just in the course of a year. And then over a life, just an awful lot of meals. So you want to get a few meals down that are going to work, that they're affordable, they taste really good. You can eat them again later. You can freeze them. And I make a really good bean soup, I'll tell you.
Oh, yeah.
Before I came over here this afternoon, I started soaking some beans. And you just told me that you just learned how to make beans.
I know. I'm embarrassed. I'm 30 and a half, and it's taken me this long to learn how to actually make beans from dried beans.
No, Brock, you're right on schedule.
Okay.
You're doing fine.
Thank you.
Anyway, that particular blog post was looking at the whole thing of the quick gratification. You know, just what's appealing right in the here and now versus what really sustains you over time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And good food really sustains you, and junk food, we all eat it. I do too. It's not a very lasting pleasure.
No, it's not.
No.
A matter of fact, here, another confession. I had McDonald's today on the way home because I was in the time crunch. Woke up at 8, left at 8:30. Drove straight from here or there to here, to be here for the show. And I was like, well, I'll just get something from the drive-thru. That'll be easy. And it's like not 10 minutes after you finish eating, you're just like, that was the shittiest food I've ever eaten. Why did I want that? Why did I think it was a good idea? But that's how it goes.
And all of a has experienced that. Mm-hmm, right. All of us do that.
Now, had I had some pinto bean soup, had I been more foresightful, it could have been a lot nicer of an experience.
It seems to me that all of us do a combination of eating some really good food and then gorging on some stuff.
Oh, yeah.
We all do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I guess while we're all confessing things.
There we go.
So I've been doing this bean and rice fast.
Oh, yeah. You've been eating nothing but beans and rice.
But beans and rice for Lent.
Right.
So I'm now on week four. But taking breaks on Sundays makes it a little bit easier. And so today, being Sunday, I went and got myself an apple fritter.
Mm-hmm. As you do.
As I do. And it just, the opportunity came to me. I went to the local grocer with my housemate who was doing the house groceries. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm going to get an apple fritter, darn it. Cause it's Sunday.
I deserve it.
Cause I did something to deserve this.
That's right. Being awake today. It's a chore.
And it was, in retrospect, anyways, the driest, worst fritter I've ever had.
Aaron, I love the way that you're sitting here de-romanticizing the apple fritter. At the moment, it seems like such a good idea.
Oh, it was. I was like, yeah, apple fritter. I'm going to get a coffee with it.
And yet it really kind of didn't satisfy. It disappointed you.
No, I would have been better off both financially and gastrically if I just gotten an apple. And maybe even like dry flour and threw it in my mouth. I don't know.
Apple and dry flour, the new fritter. It's the it's the camping fritter.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow. What I look at on my blog is how human we all are, mm-hmm. Including myself. And I think that all of us really want to make good choices. Mm. And we might define good choices somewhat differently.
Sure.
And, you know, I think of people in New York City or people in, you know, Asia, and they probably, the particulars of their choices are not going to be the same as our apple fritter and our McDonald's.
Right.
But we all really want to make good choices. And we're all, in a lot of cases, trying to figure out how to do that more consistently.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at least being consistent with what you profess to be your own beliefs. Mm-hmm. And it may turn out you don't believe that food systems are very important and, you know, then that bears itself out in life experience and practice. But for me, that's the hardest part. Like if I believe that like the junk food I'm eating is actually junk food, which it's really hard to convince myself of again, because it tastes so good at the time.
At the time.
And then it feels terrible afterwards.
Yeah, it does. Yeah.
I think it's just it's a slow burn of letting those things take hold and mm-hmm. catch fire in your own head mm-hmm. and get to the point where you believe that enough. You can pass up the stuff that might taste good in the moment because you believe that it's, you know, it's bad for you.
Yeah, you eventually, I don't know, one of the things that this whole process of fasting has taught me is just you eventually figure out what's good in the moment and what's good over time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
this whole apple fritter episode maybe being an illustration of this. But also, since I take breaks on Sundays, I really start intentionally thinking about what it is I want on that day. You mm-hmm. know, for example, last week I made this sweet deep dish Chicago style pizza mm-hmm. from scratch because like it's a Sunday and I want to make it special. I don't want to just grab any old piece of whatever. And maybe that's also what this apple fritter is teaching me now too. But then like today I made tamales for my house because, you know, again, like just thinking about the process and intentionally, what am I going to enjoy the most out of this meal, you know, versus like, am I craving sugar or am I craving meat or cheese or whatever?
Yeah, yeah.
I really like your use of the word intentional.
Yes.
I've noticed that word. And I also noticed that you're taking Lent seriously.
A little bit, yeah.
A little bit. And I wanted to riff off of that for a minute.
Okay, sure.
Because that's, to me, that's a good jumping off point. In the People's Republic of Portland, I would suggest, and I'd like to hear if you guys see it this way or differently, I think there's really a bias against religion. And I'm a liberal Christian. I go to Lincoln Street Church, which is a wonderful church on Lincoln and Southeast 51st. And, you know, it's funny how almost embarrassing it is to be a Christian, even a liberal Christian.
Sure.
Because fundamentalists tend to get all the airplay.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I have a lot of liberal friends. Well, most of us do in this part of the state. And they tend to think, they won't say it, but I can just tell that they think poorly of Christianity and religion
sure.
in general.
Right.
And I almost want to dialogue about that and say, where's your appreciation for diversity?
You know? Sure.
because yeah. this is just another way of being in the world. And whether or not you believe in God, I think it comes down to how do you treat people? Mm-hmm. How do you True. Treat the earth True. And how do you treat people?
True. Yeah. I would say my motivation for this whole Lenten practice was a little bit less about like, how do I get close to God, however anybody defines it. And side note, I think also we as Christians, and I'll come out of the closet now on the air about that.
Thank you, Aaron. Me too.
Sometimes our bad rap is a bit deserved. And, you know, I'll be the first and second and third and fourth and fifth to apologize for that over and mm-hmm. over again.
Sure.
Anyways, the idea of the Lenten practice is, for me, was less about, you know, this maybe spiritual setting so much as like really being intentional with, again, my food choices, my diet choices, really learning what it takes to bring food to my table, mm-hmm. you know,
mm-hmm.
And the whole solidarity with people who just, you know, I mean, beans and rice is actually a luxury for
Amen
some parts
to that.
Of the world.
That's a lot of the know? World right
yeah.
there.
Yeah. And you know, I'm tempted eventually to just do rice for a while just to experience that. And I had like for a week once about a year ago, and maybe in a way, you know, in the whole spiritual spectrum of things, you know, the whole interconnectedness that we all have, mm-hmm. you know, regardless of religious or spiritual
mm-hmm.
background,
mm-hmm.
You know, maybe in a way that's bringing me closer to God.
Mm-hmm.
But I would say the more practical aspect of it is just the whole solidarity with each other that we can have, you know, by, in a way, by like yeah. intentionally, giving something up or fasting from something to really pay attention, like what it takes to not just be without, but also to have that in
yes.
your diet. You
yeah.
know, say, you know, a really easy one for Midwestern. I grew up in Michigan. A really easy one for Midwestern Christians was like, I'm going to give up candy, you know, and that's great. But if you really want to do it, you know, really take some time and think about like what it takes to get candy to your table, you know, and not just like, oh, I'm so without this sugar or, you know, I really like candy and it's going to take a lot of willpower. But to really think about, you know, chocolates and hard candies and whatever, like the transportation involved. And I'm, you know, maybe going off a little bit more on this than necessary, but, you know, what it takes to get that to you. And therefore, when you do have that in your diet, in whatever quantity you decide, like it becomes more appreciable.
I agree. And candy is a fine example because it's a luxury product.
True.
It's
yeah.
luxury, and it's really valuable to get our minds around what are our needs and what are our wants.
Mm-hmm.
What are the things that are holding our lives together, and what are the privileges, the luxuries,
right.
what are the luxuries.
And you did a fair amount of writing about that, correct? As far as like figuring out, one that caught my eye was the how do you deal with the temperature of your house and what you wear in the house?
Oh yeah,
and that it's actually better to put on more clothing. Referencing Jimmy Carter when he said put on a sweater back in the
70s. I remember that.
The idea that basically. It's pretty expensive to heat your house to the temperature of a sweater, just so you can walk around in your shirt sleeves.
Good point.
And I have a housemate who spent most of his time in New Mexico over the past 2 or 3 years, and he just moved back to Oregon. And so he keeps the house at, you know, like 70 degrees or something like that, which I would come inside, you know, after returning from work in the mornings and be like, oh, it's so hot in here. And be like, it's so cold. And yeah, it's tricky.
Yeah. It's that particular thing is kind of a point of stress in our house.
I think anytime you share a house with someone, everyone sure. has a different idea about the thermostat.
Temperature yeah. is a big deal. And I'm going to put in a plug. And it's not that I'm the best in the world, but this because I like to be warm. I grew up in Southern California. I like to be warm.
Mm-hmm.
But our clothing and our socks, they're just much more powerful things to keep us warm. Mm. Than trying to heat up, you know, this whole house or this whole room. You know, so much of the world, well, actually the U.S. for most of its history, there was no central heating.
Right.
There might have been one spot in the house that was being warmed by a wood fire. And humans are really perfectly able to not have temperatures in the 60s or 70s. We're perfectly suited
yeah.
to it. we just need to get used to it. We need to move around more. We need to move our bodies around more.
Right. Sure, sure.
And that takes you so far down the path of warmth.
And most of us live in a pretty sedentary context these days, like more and more jobs.
Especially in comparison to, like, say, you know, prehistoric man. Mm-hmm. You know,
or even just man of a couple hundred years ago or 100 True. Years ago.
True.
You know, even in comparison to that, we're being way too sedentary. And that comes up all the time in my life. I don't like sitting still. It's great sitting and talking. I can really do this. But I think one of the reasons that all three of us ride bicycles a deal of the time is because it feels so much better than sitting in a freaking car.
Yes, it does.
I get so out of sorts in a car.
Right.
Oh, my heavens.
Plus, a car is like a condom, right?
Thank you. You had to bring up all of these same topics. Yeah, what Brock is talking about is something I wrote about when I was in Montreal on a vacation. And we did a pretty much car-free vacation.
Yeah. Congratulations.
And it was fun. It was really fun. We did a lot of walking, and Montreal has good transit. And what I was writing about in that post, it was back in September, is that a car can just be a barrier between you and the world. And I don't really want that much barrier. I mm-hmm. would really rather have a more porous relationship with the world. And bikes and transit and walking, they give me that. And even my carpool gives me that, because here I have this person who's pretty interesting. And we talk, and I learn things. And it's not all about me in this, oversized vehicle.
Right, yeah. And particularly when you're traveling, I think the exposure to your surrounding environment, I appreciate that on my commutes when I go to and from work. But there's also just the idea that when you're going somewhere that you haven't been before, and, you get into a car and you drive around, you're basically visiting a place and not really being there.
Right.
And I love the experience of walking around on a city streets or riding a bike through a city I'm not very familiar with, or being on the subway and seeing, you know, what kinds of people mill about, you know, on the streets or are going from one place to another. So, yeah, I really think that's a great idea.
Yeah. I'm kind of a high anxiety traveler. And so that's where, like, car travel is really easy for me. But when I do, like, these bike tours with you guys or even hopefully on my own eventually, it's that anxiety, like, can be really exhilarating sometimes.
You know? Sure.
The whole idea of, like, oh, man, I'm going to get lost. Oh, dude, Oregon City is a great example. on our way to Crater Lake, we totally got lost in these subdivisions and suburbia and everything.
Yeah.
And it was kind of stressful, but it's also kind of exhilarating, too, because here is a suburb that I've actually never been to before then, and then seeing, like, all these places where, like, people live.
Mm-hmm.
People live here, you know.
And that's humans. Basically before we even got out of the city. Like, it's kind of raising the excitement level when it could be a kind of a humdrum sort of, where we haven't quite gotten out of Portland yet.
Yeah, I may be romanticizing it in retrospect.
Oh, we didn't like it at the time.
No.
Yeah, yeah. I was just going to loop back to the pinto bean. Did we tie in the sexy guy analogy? I think we might have.
I don't know if we did. I think we got lost.
Well, how is pinto bean soup like sexy guys?
Well, they're actually a little bit different
it's
from
not.
Each other. Yeah, they're a little bit different from each other. Yeah, I think that a whole lot of life, you know, we all grow as we get older. I'm 52 now, although I have pretty much as much energy as I did when I was younger on the whole. My husband, I find him sexy. Probably if you looked at him, that's not the first word that would come to your mind. But there's so much pleasure in somebody who's so deeply connected to me.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, when I was younger, I might not have realized, you know, what a treasure he is.
Right. Like, you've had enough time to explore every facet of his personality, and
yeah.
You two kind of interlock and enmesh emotionally and cognitively in ways that, you've had the time to do so.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas a simple crush or infatuation is like the fast food meal.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Where it looks great, but then you're like, oh shit, that was a terrible decision. So yeah. Just to make sure we clarified that. That was why I thought the analogy was great. There was a very interesting piece on your website, Allison, about the investment of universities, and you had a letter to your alma mater, I believe.
You know, I have been really surprised by how many hits that's gotten. And it turns out that a whole bunch of people are Googling letter to alma mater,
uh-huh.
and they're coming to my letter. And I hadn't expected that. I mean, I kind of thought that it was not going to get much notice, but it's getting a lot of attention, at least from people who are Googling. So what the letter is saying, I went to Wake Forest University, which is a pretty conservative school in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And I'm glad I went there. It's a good school.
Yeah, they enjoy a great reputation.
It's a good school. It really is. I was asking Dr. Hatch, who leads the school, to consider divesting from fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
And I consider this really important. And
yeah.
It's about climate change, and universities need to be leaders here. So hopefully the letter is helping other people to see how they can also approach their alma mater with that request. He wrote me back it was a very respectful letter. It was very noncommittal.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
It was very noncommittal.
As I suppose you would expect from an
President
established
of a
institution.
University. Yeah.
Right. I think that if there were a lot of other Wake Forest alumni and students who are putting pressure on, I think that the tide starts to turn. It takes numbers.
Yeah.
Sure. And it takes ongoing pressure.
The statistics you included with that letter was basically that, well, and this is a huge systemic issue, that financial systems basically depend upon the price and success of oil in the market to keep money growing and coming into the university to do what it's supposed to do. So you've got all these donations from alumni. You've got money from other sources that's invested to keep scholarships open for students, to keep special programs running at the school. And all of those things are invested essentially in the oil market. So I was fascinated. I had not thought of that. But at the same time, like that is, I was thinking about that in another context, about oil being kind of the grease, if you will, of our entire financial system. And so much is tied into it. So figuring out how we can move away from that.
Yeah, we really need to be imagining a world with much less oil,
mm-hmm.
much less oil, and also less coal. But the oil is what's driving much of our transportation.
Uh-huh.
I think a lot of our lives... I don't know when, the timeline is not known to me, but our lives are going to eventually be much more local. And all of us love flying places. I mean, I don't know anybody who doesn't yeah. enjoy flying to warmer climates and interesting places. We all love it. I don't think that it's going to be around for a lot of the future. Mm-hmm. I think it's a brief blip in human history.
Or be much more of a luxury and far less common.
That too. Yeah. Right.
And it's funny. I was just thinking about like the reasons and the motivations behind conservation, that sort of thing. Like, it would be easy to say, like, you know, we should conserve oil because we like using oil. The other tack to take that, and maybe the better tack, might be that it's not just that we want to have oil when we need it, but we also need to figure out how to get along without it.
Yeah.
Because, or with much less of it.
Because it does, yeah, so such terrible things, both directly to the environment and indirectly in social and financial directions and ways. It's I could think about this and be really depressed for days and days.
Yeah,
because there are so many intricacies.
This was in a way sort of the basis of Brandon Rhodes's ex co-host,
yeah.
His PhD thesis, mm-hmm. right? The
yeah.
car and what it's done to specifically church culture.
Right, yeah. We got to have him on and have him talk about that
yeah,
sometime soon.
Yeah.
He is now Dr. Rhodes. So,
oh, yeah, Dr. Yeah. Brandon Rhodes.
He just had his defense of his thesis. So he's essentially, aside from the regalia, he's done, which feels good. But
when
you were going to say.
When you talk about getting depressed, I keyed in on that. I think that when we talk about climate change and global warming, it's very easy to very quickly get depressed.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of refuse to do that. That's
good.
Yeah, I just refuse to do that. It seems like in 2008, it seems to me that a lot of us were very readily talking about global warming and climate change. It was just much more on people's tongues.
Mm-hmm.
And now, even progressive people, great hesitation in talking about it. And I think that it relates to the economy. You know, the economy went really south,
yeah.
and so then people go into fear mode. It's very easy to be in a place of fear.
When you're in that space of scarcity, you don't want to talk about the things trigger said scarcity.
And so I push back against my own reticence about talking about climate change. And it was a little bit hard for me to put the letter to the alma mater up there on the blog, because I sense that people tense up, you know, when climate change comes around as a topic. We're afraid. Well, of course we're afraid.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't have to live in fear. We can talk about it. It doesn't have to be an unmentionable.
Right.
It is happening. I mean, climate change is happening.
Well, yeah. And you talk about, like, the loss of air travel eventually, or, you know, as a
we could
possibility.
Still be happy. You know what? We could still be happy
Certainly.
People even if we couldn't fly places.
Certainly. But I think also as a culture, we're not good at mourning.
Interesting thought.
And so when we lose anything, you know, be it, you know, a loved one or the possibility to travel to Hawaii by airplane, you know, it brings us in this mode of like, what do I do? And I don't know how to grieve that very well, because We're not a culture that grieves well.
I really like that connection that you just made. I think that that is true. We don't know how to grieve.
Nope.
We think it's always about having more, and that shows your competence in the world. If you gain more, it's because you're competent. But yeah, sometimes loss is going to happen, and we do need to grieve it.
It happens all the time. Yeah, yeah. And it's okay to be sad about this, you know.
I agree.
And to go,
man,
I really do want to fly to Hawaii.
Of course, you know? Would. Absolutely.
It's a really awesome place, but you know, you go through the process, you grieve. I mean, that's why a lot of, you know, more, I don't know how to put this, but that's why a lot of other cultures have very rigorous and very set rules of grieving. It's because they know that there's a process, and we lost that somewhere along the way.
That's a really good insight.
You know, I've got
insight.
Some theories about that, and I don't want to go, like, we're sidetracking maybe a little more than that.
I like your insight, and I do believe, I actually have a master's in counseling, I do believe in just getting with those emotions, because if you don't acknowledge them and get with them, you act them out in weird ways.
Yeah,
and this whole denial thing, mm-hmm. you know, that to me is part of this whole, well, I'm going to stuff those emotions away.
Yeah.
They're too big to deal with, they're too painful, and so I'm just going to deny, and business as usual, status quo. I just don't see the world that way. The status quo is not working. Business as usual does not work. So
I think that loops just back around to the guy at the concert who wanted to break a bottle over somebody else's head.
Yeah.
Because he probably had something going on that probably wasn't involved with the concert experience. It was probably some other sort of
unresolved
issue.
To get a little corny about it, my housemate Rod said, hurt people, Aaron.
Mm-hmm.
Which, corny, but true.
Yes, I get that.
Yeah. I get that, Rod. You're right.
Yeah.
So I think that if we were better at working with our emotions, we'd be more mature and we'd be more able to make good choices.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if we were more physical, looping back to the sedentary thing,
right?
I think if we had more physical of lives, that works out a lot of emotions without even having to think about it.
Sure.
Yeah.
You know, don't even have to do all this talk therapy necessarily. If you ride your bike for an hour, you're going to be in a better place. You're going to be more able to deal with stuff.
Yeah. Well, and I have an hour and 15 minute commute if I ride all the way from here to there. Sometimes I take the max and that cuts it down by a certain amount of time. It's more like a 4 mile ride than a 14 mile ride. But yeah, I've actually just been processing some thoughts, some personal private thoughts of my own recently. And if I didn't have that bicycle commute, I'd be a fucked up person in the head. I would have no possible repose. I would probably hurt somebody's feelings.
I believe you.
Yeah,
I believe that. You're working things out on your bike.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's like when I'm riding with an earbud in and I'm listening like to some program, NPR or something else, and like my own thoughts butt in and I'm like, I gotta shut off the audio and think about this because like they're right there, and I've got an hour, so mm-hmm. why not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and mm-hmm. being sedentary is kind of a luxury, globally speaking. Sedentary lifestyle is a luxurious lifestyle, and it's a comfortable one. Unfortunately, comfort and
health don't go together.
They don't necessarily come together. And you gotta hurt sometimes. You gotta grieve. You gotta work things out. And sometimes that just means you have to shut kind of that part of your brain
the
that continues
seeking.
To thinking about
it. You have to turn away from that part that always wants the comfort.
Right. And that's great. Like everybody wants to be comfortable, and it doesn't hurt to be comfortable, but it doesn't help to heal those hurts,
and
looping back to the whole global warming and the reason why we don't like to talk about it, you know, it's much easier for us to, you know, put our headphones in and, mm-hmm. and plug into our iPods. And, mm-hmm. you know, I'm just as bad of an offender of that as anybody, you know, than it is to like go like, okay, I got to work this out. I don't know how. I'm going for a 5 mile run, mm-hmm. or I'm going to bike for 30 mm-hmm. minutes or whatever.
Right. Like, I agree with all of that. And comfort can make us really weak.
Oh,
we all need some comfort. Absolutely. But too much comfort, it weakens us.
Yeah.
We have to challenge ourselves both emotionally and physically.
Yeah. It's a great coping mechanism, you know, and it's a good thing. Like, yeah, your body doesn't like to be in pain, both physically or emotionally.
But if you're in control of that pain, it's very different.
Sure.
You know, we all choose to do some things with our bodies that are challenging. It burns, it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that we're in control of it.
Right.
You know, we can stop the bike or get off the run if we want to. Looping back to the temperature thing. You know, if I'm too cold, well, I know that I really do have the option of turning on the heat. But being in control and pushing against your own, the edges of your comfort zone, mm-hmm. that's a really healthy thing, both yeah. for yourself and it's also healthy for the planet.
Yeah. As everyone's dad would say, it builds character.
Well, it's sure. a cliche, but there's a lot of truth to it.
Yeah. You yeah, know? For sure.
There's truth to it.
Totally. Yeah.
I owe a big apology to my housemates for the thermostat. And
did you spike it?
No.
Did you turn it way
I'm
down?
I'm just saying, like, it's been a constant source of conflict, and I'm one of the guys who likes it warm.
Yeah.
So here on the air, I commit to doing some push-ups or sit-ups or whatever when I'm cold.
There you go.
Putting on a sweater.
Exactly. Carter would be proud.
Thank you.
Oh, I like... This was a conversational spirograph. We looped back on things lots and lots of times. It was great. Allison Wiley, thank you for joining us. You're at it's diamondcutlife.org.
Diamondcutlife.org.
There we go. Yeah. And your book is what again?
Revelle, R-E-V-E-L-L-E, and it's available on Amazon. Oh, I can invite you all. I love inviting people to things.
Ooh.
I'm doing a reading discussion of Revelle. At Rain or Shine Coffee. This is the kind of place I know you guys like to hang
out. Oh, on Division.
Out. Totally.
Yeah.
Division and 60th.
It's such a nice, low-key place.
Everybody loves Rain or Shine. Everybody, it's a great place. So
it's
this is
remarkably bright inside.
It's very bright.
It's good for rainy days.
It really is. So this is on Thursday, March 28th. That's the last Thursday in March, 6:30. Rain or Shine, 60th and Division. And I'm going to be reading and discussing my novel, Revelle, and I'd love for everybody to come on over and meet. I'd love to meet people.
Oh, very good. Awesome. I'll be out of town on spring break. Aaron, you'll be here.
I'll be here.
And I'd love to see you, Aaron.
That's
6:30. I'm putting it in my calendar cool. as we speak.
Lovely.
When this episode drops, that'll be the Thursday after the show. So awesome. Everyone, cool. if you're in town, please go.
Cool.
Yeah. Let me, real quick, we'll look at our calendar here. It's March 31st. We have an update with former guest Deanna Adams. She was on the Fixie Vegan Tour down in Mexico, and she did some great stuff and has some other updates to give us, so there's that. April 7th, Lindsay Kendra, I believe is how you say her last name. I need to confirm that. She is a triathlete and a cancer survivor, so she's going to tell us about
awesome.
That. And she probably also will fill us in on racing, because she races, and I don't understand racing, so I think it's a good time to kind of fill in that gap in my head. March 14th, Alien Karate from Film by Bike. It's coming up soon, and we're very excited about it. And April 21st, Zed Bailey and Dan Kaufman from pdxk.org and Open Bike Night. I will be dropping in, and by the time this airs, we'll have dropped in last Wednesday, at Velo Cult's Open Bike Night, where once a month they have people come in and tell stories.
So
and
will you be telling a
jam
story?
And yes, I'm actually going to curate a collection of the most awkward moments of the podcast and try and air those. So.
That sounds like fun.
Yeah.
I did not know about this. I didn't sign off for this.
all right. Well, hey, let's close the show out. We'll see you all next week. I will be in Asheville, North Carolina for the week of spring break when I get off from work. So if anyone has any suggestions for me as far as places I should go, people I should see or whatever while I'm there, let me know.
Awesome.
And yeah, well, with that, let's this is the wrong one. There we go. That was our news thing. This has been our weakest point on the show to date. Is
these transition?
Yes,
pieces.
Closing the show with music.
Yeah, we'll get it.
That's right.
All right. Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback about the program and suggestions for topics and/or guests and/or drinks. Write us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Or call and leave us a message at 503-847-9774. Connect with us on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Find him on the internet at ryanjlane.bandcamp.com. Thanks to Hurtbird for our headline sounder.
Just the tiniest bit that we had there.
that tiny little...
Yeah.
Anyways, find them at hurtbirdmusic.com.
All right, see you next week.
I fidget a lot.
Okay, well, that's cool.
Give me a little bit of something from you, and we'll see how you sound.
Brock, it's really good to meet you.
Aaron, oh, shucks.
You too.
Thanks.
Want to do like a rain in Spain or what? Some nonsense phrasing?
Well, I have to say you make really good coffee.
Well, thank you.
Rain in Spain falls mainly on the plant, right?
So it does. So I've been told.
Yes. I've been to Spain, but it's been a lot of years.
Check.
You comfortable?
Yeah.
All right.
raise the mic so that way my posture will...
There you go, yeah.
I strive for good posture at all times.
I actually end up, you know, I should do that with mine too. We're going to be upright citizens on this
Indeed.
Show.
Indeed.
Yeah. I have high hopes of someday installing like permanent microphone stuff, like some sort of like scissor boom stand that would like expand from the wall, but until then we got a bunch of cables and wires and stands going everywhere, and my posture will always be unfortunately bad, so